Live at AsylumFantasySports.com and heard worldwide on the Rick Abbey. Now this time in English, heard worldwide on the Armed Forces Radio Network. It's the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show.
Thank you, Rick, for that smooth intro.
How'd you like my radio voice at the end, though?
That was
pretty
wonderful.
Good.
Yeah. We are Fligger and Briggs. Welcome to the Asylum, wherever you may be listening to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show. Thanks. And, you know, this episode is brought in part by Fair Market Fantasy. And there's still time to get in on the playoffs. And there's five reasons that playoffs at Fair Market Fantasy are the best. Shut up. You can choose a lineup for the whole playoffs. Player prices are set by market demand. You can trade players back to the market at any time. You get $20,000 in reinforcements, which in parentheses is additional salary cap after the first round.
In parentheses, it has to be true.
Winning team player prices rise and losing team players' prices drop.
Well, I would hope so.
Yes, sir.
They will no longer
and if you
be,
miss the initial playoffs lineup in January, you can still play contests for individual postseason games. There's NBA, MLB, there's all kinds of things. So fairmarketfantasy.com.
Check it out. No doubt. Thank them for sponsoring today's show. So on Twitter, Rick, give us a follow on Twitter, at Asylum Football. Also follow the Armed Forces Radio Network there, at the AFRN, armedforcesradionetwork.co. Let them know you're hearing us here, asylumfootball@gmail.com, all that jazz. If you haven't listened before, shame on you. That's how you get a hold of us. So, Rick,
and don't
show.
Forget, oh. Do not forget, 646-478-4679 to call into the show.
Oh, yeah, I better pull that software up here, Rick, so I can see if anybody would be so kind as to do that. Absolutely jammed show tonight, Rick. Way too much going on, so let's hop right into it. Just a few headlines. I don't think any big news in terms of fantasy football, unless you care, Rick, that Deion Branch signed with the Colts. That moved the needle for you whatsoever?
I've been wondering about Deion Branch has been doing.
Yeah.
That is a great move.
Yeah, I wonder, do you honestly believe bringing in a guy who used to play for a team, and I think that has more to do with it than anything, gives you any type of edge whatsoever?
That used to play with the team? You're talking about a Super Bowl winning team? Is that
Branch
what you're talking about?
Used to play with the Patriots.
Well, yeah,
so
but
I don't
you didn't say
a,
that.
Well, I think that the people know. We have an informed audience. Really.
He played with a team. Does that make him a good pick? I don't know. I mean, he's probably some leadership presence, an impact on the field. I kind of doubt it.
No, I don't be surprised if he sees the field unless they get into some five wide receiver sets, if they get down by 35 again and have to make another furious comeback.
Yeah, I mean, he may have a little bit of impact, kind of like a Ricky Prohl did on the team and the Panthers when they were kind of a young team. You know, after he left the Rams, Steve Smith really looked up to him. You know, maybe
Ricky
Brandon
Prohl reference. Wow.
Yeah, maybe Brandon Stokely, that kind of thing.
That's
about all you're going to get from him, I believe.
But nothing exciting there. Percy Harvin is practicing and is fully expected to play. That is something that may have an impact. He came back for about a minute and a half there, Rick. Earlier in the year, went back out, had very little impact. This is a guy, he's a dynamic guy. If he's healthy, he's ready to go, and they get him worked in the offense. One more weapon on an already pretty dangerous Seahawks team.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a rub. Therein lies
the
rub.
Therein lies the rub.
What minute and a half are you going to get out of him?
Well,
he really worries me to death. He just can't seem to get over it in really about any season, but when he gets hurt. But this year has been especially difficult, and he just can't seem to get him on the field. However, going back to what you said, he's a dynamic player, and if he's healthy and playing, look out, because they're just another big weapon.
And look at the impact Randall Cobb had coming back for the Packers, two fine games before their unceremonious exit last week. But, yeah, I'm usually cautious with guys coming off of injury. However, a guy this dynamic of a player – yeah, you don't discount it. He's another weapon. Probably not going to get all the touches you normally. If this is a normal fantasy week, I don't know that I recommend him as a starter. But if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm certainly happy to have him back.
No doubt about it.
Steve Smith, limited in practice this week with the knee. He can be all right. Am I going to have to take emergency steps here?
I apologize. I told you before the show, I kind of have a dry throat tonight. A little fighting against under the weather here.
Well, don't go passing it off to me. Keep your spit guard well covered up over there. Steve Smith, as I was saying, dealing with a knee injury, limited in practice, but expects to play. I think it's a different team without Steve Smith. While his numbers have been down, he's that presence, he's that leader, he takes away that top coverage, opens up guys like Brandon LaFell, and opens up the middle for Greg Olsen. So I think it's going to be important to the Panthers that Steve Smith plays this week.
Oh, and he is the poster child of attitude for that offense as well.
No question about it. Probably the
definitely need him on
team.
There. Exactly.
I don't know how much I like that. Rick, Titans fire coach Mike Munchak. The Redskins hire coach Jay Gruden. Let's start with Jay Gruden. Does anybody have a shot in Washington as long as Daniel Snyder's there? I don't think it matters who they bring in.
I don't really think it matters really to this point, but, you know, what was the hurry? Jay Gruden was not that great of an offensive coordinator. With the weapons on Cincinnati, he's not that impressive to me. I know he has the pedigree, but I really think they could have shopped around a little bit.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know what better's out there. If I had to guess, knowing what little bit I know about Daniel Snyder, he wanted John Gruden, couldn't get him, so just give me a Gruden. You know, I don't care which one. Any random Gruden will be fine with me.
I mean, yeah, if you had your heart set on a guy named Gruden, yeah. I guess it's a great hire.
Absolutely.
But,
probably the second best Gruden. If you can't get the best Gruden, go to the next one.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like I said, I wasn't impressed with him as an OC. But, I mean, you know, you got Zimmer out there. And, I mean, there's a lot of other qualified candidates. I just think, you know, that historic franchise, I think they can almost have their pick.
You would think, but who wants to work? I guess Daniel Snyder throw a pile of money at you, but it's going to be – that's just been a wreck in Washington. It's
sure
embarrassing,
it
and I feel bad for Redskins fan. The story for me with Mike Munchak, Rick, isn't so much that he's been fired. I think this is another deal. I don't know how much talent the guy had to work with. It wasn't a very good team. It was a bleh team, and they got bleh results. And maybe a coach is worth a win or two here or there throughout the year. What I'm interested in, what's telling to me, is Mike Munchak is now being mentioned for all these remaining open jobs.
Yeah.
A lot of these teams can't wait to get a hold of him. Makes you wonder what the Titans are driving at when they make that move.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what is going on in Tennessee. You know, I mean, they always were, you know, they went to the Super Bowl, you know, with Fisher and so forth. And slowly started to decline a little bit. You know, there's a lot of tenure there with Fisher. So, you know, and a lot of the stories went around, well, maybe it's time to move on, a fresh start. But they just don't seem to get any better. In fact, they're actually worse, you know, than when Fisher was there, obviously. And, I'm just not sure exactly what's going on. Is it, you know, I don't know who's making all these draft picks.
Yeah.
They're certainly not really bolstering that team up.
It's like every team that finishes between 6-10 and 8-8 every year. They don't have a quarterback.
Well,
Jake
Locker's
not
obviously
the guy. And they came out and said it this year. Jake Locker's
right.
Since Steve McNair left, they haven't had a quarterback and they haven't been successful since. It's really that simple for me. And you can lay it on the coach. And like I said, I may say a coach is worth 1-2 wins a year, but that's it. And 1-2 wins a year is not going to get the Titans into the playoffs in most years. So, but what's telling is Mike Munchak being talked to by the Lions. You see the Lions, by the way, they have Matt Stafford sitting in on the coach interviews. What do you think about that?
I think it's just a totally different world. There's no question about that. Vince Lombardi will not survive as a coach today. There's no question about that. And, you know, when you have players, well, let's face it, Matt Stafford has a lot of talent, and he has a lot of talent around him. I'm not so sure that, I mean, was it just the offensive plan that was at fault for their collapse this year? I mean, what gives Matt Stafford the all-knowing eye of what coach is best for that team?
Yep.
Initially,
I don't like it, Rick, but when I think about it, when you have a franchise quarterback, they're pulling a lot of the strings on the team. Now, I don't know how much decision-making power he has. I'm not sure I hate him being part of the process. And you don't know how involved he is, or is he really just sitting in the back of the room being part of this. But the relationship between quarterback and coach, look back, let's go back to the Redskins, how important that is and what that can do to the fortunes of your team. I don't hate it. It sounds odd, but I don't hate it.
I'll tell you why I don't like it. I guess it goes back to a couple shows ago. No.
You went right to Vince Lombardi.
Why I went to Vince Lombardi for one reason, yeah, obviously because the coach should be in charge of the team. They certainly haven't had that. But no, going back just a couple shows ago with the story about Reggie Bush commenting that the team didn't have leadership and so forth, and I thought that that was pretty much of a crime considering you have Calvin Johnson. Yeah, look, Russell Wilson has Seattle right on his back. He's got command of that team. Stafford doesn't. His stats aren't that great. He's really not a big leader. So why in the hell is he choosing a coach?
Fair.
That's what bugs me.
Fair.
I mean, it's not like this is Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, somebody like that with a proven background and track record. You know, I mean, let's face it.
What have you done for me, I guess is the question. But I think he's a talented quarterback. And you bring up Calvin Johnson, you got Reggie Bush. That's a team built to win now. That defensive line, that's a team built to win
now.
There's
no question.
I guess if you're going to bring in a new coach, and I think I agree, Schwartz in this case, yeah, I just made the point of Munchak not being the issue in Tennessee. There's the lack of leadership in Detroit, and that starts with the head coach. So moving on,
yeah. I think if you go from a Jim Schwartz, and say, and of course it would never happen, but say to a John Gruden or a Bill Cowher. There's a case right there where I think maybe a Schwartz has cost them two wins.
Probably.
Another guy coming in gives them two wins. It could be a difference of four wins with that team.
Yeah, now
easily.
You're talking 11, 12 wins.
Easily,
skill-wise, that team has. Well, let's move off of that, Rick. That's about all I have for headlines. Let's go ahead and recap a wild, wild card weekend. Some games I've never seen anything like, starting with Indianapolis 45, Kansas City 44. What a disaster for Kansas City and for Indianapolis, sort of an on-steroids version of their entire season. Get yourself down double digits and then come back in the second half and win.
Yeah, it's 38-10. There's just no excuse for that. I'm sorry. The Kansas City defense certainly wasn't as good as first advertised the first half of the year when they were 9-0. But to blow a 28-point lead with the turnovers Luck had, I mean, that's inexcusable.
Yeah.
I just cannot believe that. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm appalled. But, you know, getting back, I have to hit on this story
all
because
right,
it's so
right.
close to home.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. The Baltimore Sun reported that, and he just happens to be in the Mercer County State Correctional Institution, which is about 9 to 10 miles away from where we are
short
sitting
hike
right
from
now.
This very seat.
Yes,
it?
Daniel L. Spuck,
Mr. Spuck,
who online, you know, like I said, he's in the Mercer County State Correctional Institution, filed a motion earlier this month against the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell in the U.S. District Court for Western District of Pennsylvania, requesting a temporary emergency injunction to halt the playoffs over a blown call in Week 17 game between Kansas City and San Diego. And, you know, I don't know if we can or not, but we're going to have to interview this
guy.
We're going to try to interview this guy.
Anybody out there has family, friends, or coworkers in the pen, let us know how you get a hold of somebody in the pen.
Yeah.
You still have to write letters? Do they still do that? I don't imagine you just call up and ask for Mr. Spuck, and, you know, and they're going to hand him the phone.
Well, you do have visiting things. You go, you talk through the wall and the little phone
thing.
Oh,
if we could
do
that and do a remote from the Mercer County prison and talk to this guy.
I don't know if that would happen.
We will.
I
promise you, dear listeners, we will make every effort. We will exhaust every avenue to interview this man. He deserves the airtime, and I agree with him 100%. Shut down the playoffs. There was a bad call on a judgment. Well, not a judgment. It was a blown call. We get that. And as Steeler fans, I feel I should agree with this. I agree. Shut them down.
Well, he asked the court for a temporary injunction of 1 week to 10 days of all NFL playoffs to allow one of the things to follow.
Okay. Oh, so he offers solutions.
Yes, offers solutions. number one, Ryan Succop, to re-kick the ball from 37 yards instead of 41.
Sounds fair.
Or the Steelers just play the Chargers on a neutral site to determine the sixth seed.
Oh, an extra playoff round.
Okay.
The NFL, how do you hate that? That's more money. That game would sell out in a heartbeat.
Okay. Roger Goodell himself declares the Chiefs the winners.
It makes
the Steelers the sixth seed instead of the Chargers. And here's the kicker.
Oh, okay.
Or Mr. Spuck is awarded $25,000 in damages.
Oh, and does Mr. Spuck enlighten us on what damages he has suffered at all?
I don't know, sitting in a little cell,
little 8x8, not getting to watch his Steelers. Do they get to watch the playoffs in prison?
Oh, I imagine.
Man, that doesn't sound like a bad gig. I missed half a game running my daughter around. If I was in the pen, I wouldn't have had to do that.
Yeah, I know, but I've watched Shawshank Redemption. You know,
any of that's true, I don't know if I want to go there. Yeah, the sisters, if you remember that part, we won't get too deep into that. Let's keep moving. So, Andrew Luck, you talk about the turnovers at the same time, 445 yards and a touchdown, another 45 yards rushing. He gave it away, and, boy, he took it right back. And I think you saw some maturity coming from that kid. And there's a kid who's going to win some Super Bowls before it's all said and done.
I think you saw a lot of maturity and leadership from Alex Smith as well.
Yeah.
Two great performances. And, you know, you're not going to throw this one on Alex Smith.
No.
That's for sure.
No, they had the offense. And you feel bad for them, the injuries they sustained. I have never seen anything like that. Jamal Charles goes out earlier, backup goes out. The secondary was so depleted. They're getting ready to play defensive lineman at safety. It's just a weird kind of game. But sadly, because I don't like that kind of game, it's becoming more the norm in the NFL. New Orleans on a last-second field goal beats Philadelphia 26-24. I'm struck by the low numbers. You know, I'm trying to find the fantasy star in this game. The low numbers from everybody could have something to do with the cold, but there wasn't a lot of wind. It wasn't like what was going on in Lambeau. Mark Ingram, a guy, though, Rick, 18 for 97, found the end zone. There's a nice little surprise, and I wonder, I don't know what Pierre Thomas's contract situation is like. I wonder what that backfield looks like going forward down there in New Orleans.
Boy, I don't know. It's always a mess, that's for sure. I mean, you know, Chris Ivory's gone, but there's still just a glut of talent back there with Thomas and Sproles, and, of course, Ingram, you mentioned him. You have to assume, depending if it is a contract year, I don't know if it is, I'll have to check into that further, but if a guy like Pierre Thomas is in a contract year, I have to assume someone's going to pay him.
Yeah, at some point, somewhere along the line.
You know, Ben Tate's on contract year, MJD.
Chris Johnson expected to be cut. There's going to be some talented running backs out there.
There should be a lot of musical running backs here later on.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting off season. Let's get through these real quick, Rick, before we take a break. San Diego 27, Cincinnati 10. Cincinnati just can't get it done in the playoffs. 8-0 at home. A.J. Green gets completely shut down. They come in and just lay an egg against the Chargers
team. And you go right back to the Jay Gruden hire. San Diego, Phillip Rivers come out. The defensive players said it was basically the same game plan as when they faced them the first time.
Right, and they almost beat them then.
Yeah, and it wasn't hard to prepare for that. If that's all the imagination you have, and you're going to Washington, what were they, 3-13?
Yeah.
Boy, good luck, pal.
How much better is RG3 than Andy Dalton? I don't know. But it's a team that went 8-0 at home, averaged nearly 40 points over their last three or four home games, and just once again laid an egg in the playoffs. This is three of the last 4 years or 3 years in a row, something like that. Last game, we got to get to break, Rick. San Francisco by a field goal at the buzzer over Green Bay, 23-20. Got to talk about Colin Kaepernick. Probably one of the, if not the biggest fantasy disappointments of the year after Ray Rice and some of the running backs. But, man, when this kid gets into playoffs, he gets the job done. 16-30, 227 a touch, 7 rushes, another 98 yards. You wonder if they protected him a little bit in the regular season, trying to keep him from taking hits. And now that it's all on the table, they shove all in, and this is who Colin Kaepernick is and can be.
It's very possible, but, you know, bear in mind, like I said last week, if they can squeak by Green Bay in that weather, this is another very dangerous team.
Yeah, and we'll get into that as we pick our divisional games right after this. And And we're back on the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show, heard worldwide on the Armed Forces Radio Network, at the AFRN and at Asylum Football on Twitter. Hit us up there, anything you want to talk about if you want to be part of the show. So, Rick, you were just talking about the impact Colin Kaepernick had and what you thought San Francisco could do if they could get past Green Bay in that weather. So I think that's a perfect segue into, let's pick this week's games. I went 1-3 last week, so don't pay much attention to me.
I went 1-3 as well.
All right, so don't pay attention to either of us. So just listen to us talk nonetheless, because, you know, we got the microphone.
Yeah,
so,
my only victory was San Francisco. Yeah, I believe you took Green Bay.
I had Green Bay. The game I got right was I had Kansas City. I had Green Bay. Let me slide back up here. I had New Orleans.
I had the
Saints going up there and winning. And the one I was least comfortable with, of course, that's the way it goes. Rick, Indianapolis coming off that big comeback, heads up to New England to take on the Pats.
I have to go to New England. As much as I'm impressed with Andrew Luck's comeback, you can't give the ball away like that to New England. And I have a feeling he's still going to make mistakes. He's still young. I don't think that team's as good as New England. I'm going Patriots.
Yeah, I have to agree. Indianapolis's MO has been to get behind double digits early and have a furious comeback. You're not going to do that against Bill Belichick.
Then
you get down 10.
You're going to be in New England outside.
Right. You get down 13 or 14 to Bill Belichick, he will put his boot to your throat, and you'll lose by 30. I don't think it's going to be quite that bad, but I have it not very close. I got New England 27, Indianapolis 13.
Sounds pretty good there.
So let's stay in the AFC, Rick. San Diego, who despite Mr. I'm forgetting his name in the Mercer County Prison's objections.
Spock,
that's right. Despite Mr. Spock's objections, the Supreme Court apparently unwilling to take this case on. San Diego travels to Denver for a divisional round matchup.
You know, as impressive as San Diego's been this year, the resurgence of Phillip Rivers, Ryan Matthews, Danny Woodhead.
What he did last week.
I tell you what, I mean, that offense is dangerous. But you know what? They're playing Peyton Manning, Demaryius Thomas, Knowshon Moreno, Eric Decker, Julius Thomas, Wes Welker. I am going Denver.
Yeah, and look, San Diego showed that they're one of the teams that can beat Denver, a divisional foe. Things can go that way. Not this time. Yeah, Peyton Manning, I could see him gagging the following week in the AFC Championship game. That's one of his favorite places to do that, especially if we're right and he ends up taking on New England. San Diego, not to jump on Mr. Spuck's side here, but San Diego doesn't even belong in the playoffs. Less so much because of that field goal. They're just not a playoff team, not in the same caliber as Denver when the chips are on the table. San Diego's going to be able to score a little bit with that Denver defense, but I got the Broncos 44-27.
Yep, I mean, that sounds pretty good right there. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of points flying around.
Now, the NFC, Rick, went a little different for me, so I'll let you start it out. New Orleans heads back up to Seattle where they got it handed to them. I can't say that on the Armed, but there's a lot of stuff I can't say on the Armed Forces Network. They got it handed to them by Seattle.
I think they're going to have it handed to them again, only a little gently, a little closer to the cuff this time. I think Seattle is destined to go to the Super Bowl. I'm sticking with Denver, Seattle. I picked them back in March, I believe it was, or April, whenever we started doing that stuff. And I'm sticking with them. I think Seattle's going to put it to them. I don't think New Orleans can I just don't think they can keep up with them. I just think Seattle's defense is going to wear down Breeze, and their run game is going to wear down their defense. I'm going Seattle 28, New Orleans 23.
I agree with everything you just said, Rick, but I'm going to pick New Orleans, and here's why. I don't know why. I just have a feeling. Here it comes.
I don't know.
There you go. It just feels like Seattle's the kind of team that's been rolling a little bit. They're at home. Everything's in their favor. I, along with you, picked them last spring to be the NFC's representative in the Super Bowl. Just feels like a kind of game, a younger team on the rise, and this is their first real big rise this year. Feels like the kind of game they lose to a guy like Drew Brees. So I think they lose. I think New Orleans wins. And I think they win kind of big, Rick. I got New Orleans 31-20 over Seattle. I think the week off hurts the Seahawks. And I love this Seahawks team. I've sort of adopted this as my second team. They're that much fun. I love Marshawn Lynch, a throwback kind of running back. We got a story about him we'll do in the last segment. Love what Russell Wilson does. He's everything Colin Kaepernick was supposed to be all year. He did it all year. I just got a feeling that Drew Brees, that this team gets on a roll. They were within a loss and not even being in the playoffs. They go up there, they win a tough game in the elements. They're going to have to do again. I just got a feeling. I don't know. Everything about this game tells you Seattle wins and probably wins by double digits. I just got a feeling. I'm going to take New Orleans by 11.
Well, I mean, I'm impressed with the Saints just because they are the Saints, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, and so forth. But I just like the big secondary of Seattle matching up with them. And the run game with Marshawn Lynch, as you say, I like the defensive line. I like Russell Wilson. If Percy Harvin comes back, there's another weapon, you know, and I don't know. I think Seattle's just built to go to the Super Bowl.
No, they are, and that's sort of why I feel like they're going to lose. As odd as that may sound, but it's the same reason I picked New Orleans last week. Last game, Rick, San Francisco heads out to the upstart Carolina Panthers. And by me saying upstart, that may be foreshadowing to all you
everything,
reading people.
I really have liked Carolina's season. But I think, I tell you, I like San Francisco's play better because, number one, they've been to the Super Bowl. They were there last year. And I don't know. There's just something to me. See, I have a little feeling about San Francisco. Green Bay scared me, you know, going up to Lambeau and that weather. And that really scared me. And I picked them in a real squeaker against Green Bay, saying if they can get by them, they can be a real dangerous team. So I got to go San Francisco, taking out Carolina. And I think it's going to be not that close myself. I'm like 27-14.
And a rare moment of complete and total agreement, Rick. I am right with you. Carolina, what a great story. What a great turnaround for that team. What a great job Coach Rivera did down there. What a great comeback by Cam Newton. I don't think they're ready for this. This is a bad draw. I'd have felt better with them having New Orleans coming into town. They played him before. This is a San Francisco team. We talked about Colin Kaepernick last segment. This is the time he gets going. This is the time he cuts it loose. Carolina's nice. They're on the comeback. I love that defense. I don't think they're ready. And I think, once again, sort of the same, even more so than Seattle, that week off is going to hurt them. I really think it is. You break any type of momentum they have. I'm with you. We're pretty close on the score. I don't even see Carolina getting the end zone. I have San Francisco 24-9 over the Panthers.
Wow. See, I think they're – I think Carolina can score. I think there couldn't be some turnovers, which is why I like both defenses. I like both quarterbacks. I like both tight ends. I certainly like the wide receivers of San Francisco better. Run games, I like Frank Gore a little bit better, but D'Angelo Williams is more than adequate.
Jonathan Stewart expected to play this week, so he'll get in for a play and a half and get hurt.
Yeah.
He hurt himself running into the huddle on the second play.
Tolbert is a much more difference maker than Jonathan Stewart by any means. And there's a good player that's overshadowed a lot, but
yes,
as far
certainly.
As credit. But, no, I like both teams, but I just think San Francisco's experience, and I think they're just rolling a little better. And I think maybe the week off may hurt Carolina more than Seattle, as you mentioned.
Certainly, no doubt about it. So that's it. Go ahead, call your bookie, put it in. I'm coming off a hot 1-3 record last week. You got everything you need to know to, you know, for entertainment purposes only. We don't condone gambling as it's illegal unless you're in Nevada. So, Rick, in this segment we wanted to get into, and we may have to wrap it around to the next one, is we're just yapping on and on. We think it's time already, even though this NFL season's going on, this fantasy season has passed. We're going to start doing a little weekly segment where we will give out some fantasy awards for 2013, and we'll start with the big one by position, Rick, our MVP awards.
Yeah, and not to be overshadowed by the very first award, but it will be, it's starting now, but it will be the last one given out in the 2014 season, the Asylumite of the Year.
Oh, don't forget that, Asylumite of the Year.
I mean, all you Asylumites out there right now, you better start planning on how to make us like you.
Whatever it how to make
because
us
if you want to win that elusive Asylum prize
package. It's been elusive. We've mentioned it
obviously
a lot.
Obviously, you're not going to beat me.
And the amount of Asylum prize packages we've sent out rhymes with hero. That's how many we've sent out because Rick Briggs loves nothing more. He can't beat anybody else, but boy, if he goes up against our dear listeners, he will smack you down, and he has done it over and over and over again.
I do not want to give up the elusive Asylum prize
it's
package.
It's sitting right here on the table, gathering dust. We can't get rid of this thing. So become the Asylumite of the Year. This is one thing that Rick Briggs cannot steal from you.
That's right. Somebody will win the Asylumite of the Year award.
Absolutely. So before we get to the Asylumite of the Year 2014, still got a lot of time left in it. Rick, let's start with the quarterback position. Do we even need to discuss it? I think we're probably going to be unanimous on this one.
I'm just looking at some stats here and using the scoring system that we used in our League of Consequence. One quarterback was 100 points ahead of second place in fantasy points, and Drew Brees was second place. Phillip Rivers was third, and Andy Dalton, of all people,
Andy
was fourth.
Dalton.
But Peyton Manning gets my vote. I don't know about you.
Congratulations, Peyton Manning. You're the Asylum Fantasy Football MVP at the quarterback position. All right, Rick, running back. I'll start this show. I got a feeling we may not agree, and we'll battle it out. We'll pick one. So I am going to nominate Rick. Jamaal Charles is obvious. I think LeSean McCoy is obvious. Both had nice years, finished up towards the top, but you drafted them in the top five of your draft. A qualification for me is a guy that was a little bit of a value, a little bit that they had statistics that put up numbers in line with these top guys, but you got a little later. Now, this guy wasn't a deep sleeper, Rick, but Matt Forte, what a comeback for this young man this year. Averaged 21 fantasy points a game, 1,339 yards, 9 touchdowns, 74 catches for 3 touchdowns in a PPR format. That is just massive. He's played nearly, if not all, of 16 games, finally healthy, a big difference maker, a guy you got probably early in the second round. My nod, Rick, goes to Matt Forte at the running back position.
That's interesting, and it makes a whole lot of sense. And obviously, to me, Jamaal Charles, I called him as my running back darling of the year, and I was correct in that assumption. But going to MVP, you have to bring into draft value and so forth, which what you brought up with Matt Forte. I'm going to give you some stats on a guy. 1,038 yards rushing, 10 touchdowns, 60 receptions, 548 yards, and 3 more touchdowns.
Okay.
Right behind Matt Forte in scoring, you know, in our format, in running back scoring at number 4 behind Matt Forte. No Sean Marino.
Yeah.
Where did you pick him up?
If you drafted him at all, it was – I actually, if you recall, Rick, he got a little bump. Monty Ball went down
right
around draft time and no Sean Marino. I'll tell you what, Rick, I'm not even going to argue with you. The numbers are lower than Matt Forte, some significantly, but if we're factoring value in, this was a 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th round kind of guy you picked up as a throwaway. He saved a couple teams of mine and kept some teams of mine floating as I dealt with injuries. I'm willing to – Rick – congratulations, no Sean Marino.
Oh, that is a surprise.
That's simple.
Because I was actually going to, you know, toot the horns of the McCoys and the Charles, because even though you picked them, you know, first, second, third, whatever it was.
I don't want to punish a guy for meeting expectations. But
no, or exceeding them.
True,
you
true.
Know.
But in this case, I think it's a big factor. It may be less of a factor for you, and I'm fine with that. So we've got Peyton Manning. We've got no Sean Marino. Denver Broncos doing quite well here. We'll see how they do going forward. The wide receiver position, Rick, I'll let you start this one.
Okay, a lot of this, you know, we talked about the draft value and so forth. So that obviously figures highly into ours. And it comes down to two people with me. And I think I know who will probably settle on because I think I know who you're going to vote for. But I'll tell you, here's a guy here, 110 catches this year, 1,499 yards and 8 touchdowns. Antonio Brown, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, he's a guy I looked at. He was on my ballot. I'll give you that.
And he finished third in scoring in our format behind only two players. And, you know, one of the players – Demaryius Thomas. He was a first round, if not a second round pick, you know, in this these big wide receiver studs that are going off early. And I think the leading scorer, I think, is a perfect segue into your nomination, I have a feeling.
Yeah, my nomination, Rick, based on value. Love the Antonio Brown pick. He was on my short list. But for me, Rick, it's got to be Josh Gordon. Suspended the first two games, shows up on a bad team, no stability at quarterback. Hauls in 87 balls for over 1,600 yards, 9 touchdowns. Here it is for me, Rick. Averaged 117 yards a game, almost 23 fantasy points a game. This guy was a stud in every sense of the word. He did it week after week, consecutive 200-yard games, horrible, horrible surroundings, bad quarterback play, just a carousel of quarterbacks all year. Consistently and over again got it done, and almost got it done quietly till the end of the year. Rick, for me, it was Josh Gordon. This guy wasn't even drafted in a lot of formats. You got him off of the waiver wire when he came back off of that suspension. Exceeded expectations to the maximum, because I don't know if there were any expectations for this guy. Put up numbers equal to or greater than Calvin Johnson, who went in the top five of a lot of drafts. For me, Rick, it's Josh Gordon, and it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, he was only three touchdowns behind Calvin Johnson, but he beat him in yards and receptions. And, you know, let's just go down through it, because there's such a glut of talent wide receiver. I mean, some of the guys that made my list, obviously, Gordon, I think I'll agree with you that we'll just that we will make him the MVP. But like I said, Antonio Brown, another guy that made my list, you know, Pierre Garçon. 113 grabs, you know, 1,346 yards.
Much to the chagrin of our boy Jersey, who had some Pierre Garçon issues throughout
right.
the year, if I recall.
And another one that made my list, 105 catches, 1,058 yards, Julian Edelman. I mean, getting him off a scrap heap, basically, at the beginning of the year. So
I'd be willing to consider him if he didn't completely 100% disappear when Rob Gronkowski went out. It makes you question Gronkowski's value or even his talent, but where these guys would be if they played somewhere else. That role in the Patriots offense is clearly built for success.
Oh, no question about that. And the touchdowns with Pierre Garçon's only 5, Edelman at 6, you know. But I tell you, worthy seasons. I just thought they was worth mentioning.
Absolutely. So, Rick, we're going to have to break here real quick. Let's squeeze the tight end out. Just real quick, this was tougher for me. I think Jimmy Graham's the obvious one. My thought with Jimmy Graham, if I drafted Jimmy Graham, you're almost drafting him as your number one right. Goodness.
For English-speaking friends,
yes.
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver is what I'm trying to say. Thank you, my friend. Always helpful, always willing to step up for me. So, again, draft value, surprise, value to the team. I hate to keep it with the Broncos, Rick, but Julius Thomas, 65 grabs, 788, 12 touchdowns is what stuck out to me. This guy, you could almost count on me. He reminded me of Bubba Frank, who just write down a touchdown for him every week and hope the yardage matched up with it. I'm going to give the nod to Julius Thomas, but you could sway me in about 6 other directions, so go right ahead.
I'm only going to try to sway you in one direction, and I have to still go with Jimmy Graham. 86 balls, 1,215 yards, 16 grabs, 100 points in our scoring system over the second-place guy, a tight end, 100
You're right.
points over second. I know you drafted him higher. I know you're drafting him, you know, in a different way than you are most all other tight ends, other than maybe your Jason Witten and one or two others. But I don't know. I think his value, that 300 in our scoring system, 328, 21.5 points, that can win you a championship.
Certainly can. I mean, it gives you a huge
100 points a game. You're talking 8 points a game more for your tight end every game over Tony Gonzalez, who was second, believe it or not, in tight end scoring. So by there, I still have to go with Jimmy Graham.
I can't make a good argument against it, Rick. Congratulations, Jimmy Graham, the Asylum MVP, fantasy football MVP at the tight end position. So for those of you scoring at home, Peyton Manning, who'd we go with at running back?
No Sean
Marino, Josh Gordon, and Jimmy Graham. Congratulations to all of you. We will be right back. And we're back on the Armed Forces Radio Network at the AFRN on Twitter. This is Fligger and Briggs.
Yes, and welcome back to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show. And we just concluded with the fantasy MVPs by position. One that we did not do, we do not do kickers. But as last year was the grand finale winner, the MVP period, was the Chicago Bears defense.
That's true.
I think we'd be remiss if we left out the defenses. And I'm just going to go with the nominations that I have is Seattle, Kansas City, Carolina, or Arizona.
Yeah.
And, you know, even as low as you go with the defenses, a lot of people were jumping up high rounds to take Seattle and so forth. I'm giving a nod to the Arizona Cardinals. There's one there that just created havoc all year long. And, 47 sacks, 20 interceptions, 10 fumble recoveries, five touchdowns. I lost my place there. You know, two blocks. And, they were just a blessing the whole way around, year long defensively.
No question about it. Probably a team that wasn't drafted. So let's give them a little fanfare as well. Congratulations to the Arizona Cardinals, the defensive MVP. Easy over there.
There we
Cowboy.
Go. Got all excited.
All right. Now you mentioned probably the obvious one on that defensive list, and if we don't choose them, they're probably second place as the Seattle Seahawks. An interesting story I found, it's something that annoys me. You know, the NFL annoys me, right? For a guy who spends as much time talking about it, I really get annoyed by it. Marshawn Lynch was recently fined $50,000 for refusing to talk to the media. There's my first problem, but let's finish the story first. Seahawks fans, so appalled by this, started an online campaign and raised the money to pay the fine. Rather than accept that money, Lord Goodell comes out and says, here's what he's going to do. And I picture him doing that thing. He puts his hands up in the air like the Messiah ring. And he says, he is going to forgive the fine. However, if Marshawn Lynch refuses to talk to the media the rest of the way through the playoffs, the $50,000 fine will be reinstated on top of a new $50,000 fine for a $100,000 fine for Marshawn Lynch refusing to talk to the media. I hate it, Rick. I don't like it one bit.
I don't either. Number one, I'll go back to your thing. I don't really care for the rule. However, it's the rule. Everybody knows it. They make a lot of money, so you got to talk to the media. Deal with it, okay?
I agree with that.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's just, okay, you're basically employed there, and if they say that's what you do, then you do it. I mean, like I said, you're making a lot of money. Deal with that part of it. But, okay, now we're going to fine you. They didn't say how you have to get the money.
That's right.
And if somebody walks up and gave him $50,000, why can't he just pay it and be on his way and forget about it? It's over with. I put that question to you, Mr. Fligger.
I agree with that 100%. My issue is still with him being fined to begin with. If the guy doesn't want to talk to the media, he shouldn't have.
Well, it's part basically a part of the job description.
Is it?
Oh,
where?
Yes,
where?
Are required. Oh, no, they are
by
required.
Whom?
By the NFL.
Is it in their contract?
Yes.
Collective bargaining.
Yes, it is in players' contract. You have to talk to the media.
Why?
You know, why do you have to do certain things?
Maybe he doesn't have
job?
Anything interesting to say.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't want to say.
Then sit there and mumble like Bill Belichick does.
Yeah, well,
I mean, he
Bill
does
Belichick,
that for an hour.
Yeah, he's made a nice career out of that. Marshawn
right.
Lynch doesn't want to do it. He wants to be a running back. He wants to run the football.
Well,
let the man run the football.
Yeah, you have to be commissioner and change that.
I should be the commissioner.
I know, but
you're
not.
And as far as Goodell being upset that the fans raise the money, yeah, that's none of his darn business. Who
cares
where that
100%
came from?
I agree 100% that that's just not going to happen until
I got things buzzing.
Yeah, I know. We got all
here.
Kinds. We hate to be distracted here, but all kinds of things lighten up.
It's crazy. So let's leave that one alone, Rick. We will just agree to disagree there. I'm going to do some research on this if they're actually required by the league to.
If you're not required, they can't fine you.
Well, sure, he's Roger Goodell. He's fined people for less. He's fined people for socks not being pulled up high enough.
This isn't an old story. I mean, there have been many players in the last few years that have run into that type of problem. Not talking to the media. I think Randy Moss did a few years ago because he got in trouble talking to the media. Then he refused to, but that they're required to, so they fine him for not, you know. So, I mean, this is not new
stuff.
Well,
there's the catch 22. You're going to get fined if you say something stupid. You're going to get fined if you don't say anything at all. You don't got a shot here. Marshawn Lynch doesn't have anything to say. I don't know Marshawn Lynch. Maybe he's not well spoken. Maybe he's just got nothing to say. Why require him to do it? That's what the coach is for. I think you can mandate the coaches do this. They mandate it with injury reports and with weekly press conferences. That's fine. These individual players have a job to do, and they go out there and they do that job. I can't understand, if there is a mandate, why you would have to go out and talk to the media. I understand it benefits the league. It benefits the player in no way. If anything, it puts the players in a vulnerable position.
Yeah. Just saying, you have to.
Just saying, you have to.
Hey, Tom Brady doesn't say stupid stuff. Peyton Manning doesn't say stupid stuff. The fact that they go up there and start, hey, look at Dennis Rodman over there, all hammered and talking, swearing at the interviewer, and he didn't care what he thought, blah, 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 blah. You know, people, if he did that playing for the NBA, I bet he would have gotten fined. Yeah. So, I mean, you're getting paid by this person, you have to do this company, and you have to do this. Just don't be stupid. You don't have to be ignorant about it.
Yeah, I guess. All right. Well, let's move on, Rick. We talked a lot about the coaching carousel in the NFL. Coaching carousel in college football has been very interesting this week, especially Charlie Strong being hired as the Texas head coach. And, boy, what a mess it has become ever since he's been hired.
It's ridiculous, and I think he's a great hire, to be honest with you. You look back at Mack Brown's record. I mean, certainly he'd been at Texas for a while. He's had some success there. And who was it? Red McCombs was the big alum, you know, saying he would be a good positional coach, maybe a coordinator, but he's not a head coach. At a university that is supposed to be one of the top three most powerful collegiate programs.
Called it a kick in the teeth, I believe.
Yeah, kick in the teeth. Well, you know what? The guy coached at Louisville, which is not the top three most powerful thing in college. He won a Sugar Bowl at Louisville.
Right.
The guy has done nothing but win. And why that's a kick in the teeth, if he can win in big fashion at Louisville, what makes you think he can at Texas?
Precisely. So you wonder, when you talk about McCombs and what this story has become.
Well,
and what
his good old boys didn't get the job is the whole bottom line.
What bothers me the most is there a racial component to McCombs' displeasure. I believe that's the way it was taken. And this is what's disturbed me about this hiring the most. 50% of every story I read feels it necessary to point out that there's now a black head coach at the University of Texas. It's 2014.
Yeah.
I am certain you didn't expect to still be alive at this point, if you look back on your childhood.
I am just emerging.
Oh, God. I don't want to think about you emerging. What's a good Lord? However, how is this still even a microcosm of the narrative at this point, to where he has to address it in the initial press conference? Charlie Strong says, a lot of times people look at you just as being a minority. I'm just a football coach. I'm a football coach directing young people's lives. How is this, Rick, in 2014? And I'll be honest, where I grew up, and truthfully where we're sitting now, you know, a little ways from where I live, but close enough, we don't live in the most diverse of circumstances. We live in rural, middle of nowhere. How in New York City and L.A. and Dallas, where these stories are coming out of, how is this the narrative? How is this still the first thing we look at? And how is the race, the color of a man's skin, going to differentiate his abilities as a football coach? I cannot believe that in 2014 we're still having this conversation.
I'm right with you. I don't either. It's ludicrous. It is still, well, look who, I, you know, and I don't know, from what I heard in the interview, he didn't mention race. I'm talking about McCombs or whatever.
But you have to think that probably played a part in it.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't know if it was so much a racial thing or he was just mad because he didn't have input as far as one of his old, you know, crones
probably
to get the job.
Right.
I don't know that either. However, the whole fact of the matter is that why is it even brought up?
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. It's ludicrous to me.
And it's forever bothered me, the Rooney Rule, they call it in the NFL. Maybe I'm naive, and tell me if I am. And generally I am, actually. I'll accept that. Generally I'll accept that I'm naive to most things. I do not believe for a second in the big money NFL that this should be necessary, that this is considered a factor by these 32 NFL teams, the race of a coach, that we're required to interview coaches of certain races to be within compliance. I have to believe at this point, maybe I'm wrong, that the best man for the job is going to get the job and would have gotten the same opportunity. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm just so tired of the conversation.
And I'm thinking, I don't really think it is so much that in the NFL. Look, I know they have the rule and everything, but Tampa Bay was criticized for hiring Lovie Smith so quick without
right.
interviewing more people. That's the guy they wanted. It
right.
didn't matter if
no.
he was green.
No, nobody cares.
No. And, you know, they
it's about
wanted
winning.
Him.
It's about winning
that's
football
all
games.
It is. You are absolutely right. Now, the college level, I know it's different there.
Yeah,
it's cronyism at its best.
And it's old, rich, white guys. We'll just say it. It's old, rich, white guys pulling the strings at these major universities. Is that how it's still part of the narrative? I can't understand. I can't grasp it, Rick, how we're still having this conversation. Why Charlie Strong has to waste 1 minute. He gets what's got to be a dream job for anybody
right.
who does that for a living, a top three, top five job. For anybody who does that for a living, and he has to waste 10 seconds of his spotlight to read that quote that I just read to you.
Yeah, and then that's 10 seconds he could have been discussing what he's going to do for the University of Texas.
And furthermore, why would it be a surprise to anybody? Because a lot of what I read was it was a surprise that Texas, being in the Bible Belt, and being in the West and in the South, would hire a black head coach. And even to those of you who are praising Texas for doing this, if you're praising it because it's a good hire for your football team, so be it. There's people praising them for doing it simply based on the man's race, just like there's people criticizing it for the same reason. Let's have an honest conversation. Let's look at the racial makeup of most sports, collegiate and professional. Why would it be a surprise that an African-American man would lead what's been, in all likelihood, a majority of African-American players? Why is this still a surprise to people?
I don't know. I mean, and why are we talking about
well,
it?
Well, and I'm just as bad, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think
here I'm giving it time as well.
Right. I think it's ludicrous, and I agree 100%. So let's get moving because we are running out of time.
All right.
All right. That's what I thought of that last story.
Oh, all right. So what do you got, Rick? It's your world as you fumble feverishly in the last 3 minutes of the show.
Not fumbling.
Right.
I am reaching down for the story of the century.
All right. Well, you have 3 minutes to tell it. So I hope it's a short story of the century.
According to a hunter.
Okay.
In San Antonio, he found and killed a Bigfoot.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
So he's dead.
Yeah. Rick Dyer claims he lured the creature with $200 worth of ribs.
Ribs.
Before,
beef or pork, or is that not relevant?
Before trapping and killing it on September 6th, get this, 2012.
12. That's a,
he plans to take the body on a nationwide tour. Now,
where,
this is
where's the body been?
We're getting this.
Oh,
now.
I'm sorry.
This is
go
by
ahead.
Joe Landau, the New York Daily News. Bigfoot is not a tooth fairy. Bigfoot is real, Dyer told TV station KSAT in San Antonio. The most important thing to me is being vindicated, letting
Ooh.
People know that I am the best Bigfoot tracker in the world, and it's not just me saying it. Now, here's an account of how he got it. I know you want to hear this.
All right.
I tracked the creature. I shot it, he said, with tears in my eyes.
Oh, so
I watched it take its last breath. In an account of the incident, Dyer, a self-described professional Bigfoot hunter, said, you know, a professional means you get
paid
for it.
Nobody does for
right?
a living. Who's paying?
Apparently.
The rib shack, apparently.
Said people reported a giant hairy beast in the wooded area, and he bought ribs from a local Walmart that he nailed to a tree to lure the beast. Dyer said his hands went numb as he aimed the gun at Bigfoot after it ripped the ribs off the tree and walked away. Rick and Morgan Matthews, the director of the documentary Shooting Bigfoot, then purchased $200 worth of ribs and nailed them all over the area. Finally, he said Bigfoot walked directly in front of him and all hell broke loose.
I can imagine.
He chased after him and shot him. And, the story goes on. There's so many great quotes, but I have to stop because we're running out of time.
Yeah, we're completely out of time. You can't top that story. So thank you to Walmart for providing the ribs that have settled this Bigfoot debacle once and for all. But that's it. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to the Armed Forces Radio Network. We will be back next Thursday live on Blog Talk Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. Check us out, armedforcesradionetwork.co, and give them a follow on Twitter @ the AFRN. Until next Thursday, we'll see you.
Take care.